I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but they are kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Not nearly as big a deal as our fine guest. She joins us right now live via phone. She is Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel Attorney at Law, pal of ours, Maggie Dawn. Welcome back, sister.
Hey, Maggie.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday.
Hey, Maggie, do you enjoy the festivities? Bucks and Six, big parade, 500,000 people. Do you enjoy the big party in Milwaukee, sister?
Absolutely. I truly never thought I'd see one in my lifetime. I was born just after the 71 championship, grew up in a basketball family, played basketball. I only had two posters in my bedroom growing up. One was the Bad Boys of Detroit Pistons.
Yeah, baby.
And then I had a poster of Sidney Moncrief. Yeah. That was it on my bedroom wall. So it was, I had a hard time watching some of the games, you know, intently, just because I get so nervous. Every possession, I think that the whole entire playoff series probably shaved about like 10 years off my life. Just too much stress.
Be a fan, not a fanatic, Maggie Dawn. Let me ask you, big parade yesterday in Milwaukee. Obviously, the fans, the city, the state came together, like a half a million of them. Maggie, are you concerned that yesterday was perhaps a super spreader event?
Yeah, I did not go for that reason. And I don't want to put any pall over what is just an amazingly unifying and well-deserved moment of celebration for the Milwaukee community in Wisconsin. I mean, being robbed of the DNC, you know, we've had our share of hits. But, boy, I am concerned, and we'll see what the infection rates look like in the next coming weeks and months.
Nope. Maggie, I wanted to get your legal opinion on this. Vaccine mandates. We hear about different employers, including the NFL, beginning to tell their tier one employees, meaning coaches, get vaccinated or effectively leave the team. You can't do your job. It has been suggested, even by Republican pollsters, that this might be the only way to get the vaccine hesitant to do the right thing, force them to do so through vaccine passports. You want to get on a plane? Get the shot. Maggie, what's your opinion? What do you think the legal remedies are in this case?
Legal remedies for those that want to challenge the mandates?
Let's start with employers. Can employers mandate it?
Yeah, it's frankly unclear right now. I think private employers are in a much more strong position to do so. I'm not sure about government employers. Frankly, I've heard arguments on both sides of this. I think the general consensus is that employers can require vaccinations. We require physicals. We require that you show up for work sober. We can force you to take a sobriety test or a drug test. You know, if you don't want to adhere to those restrictions, you do not have a presumed property right in your job. That's what's different in many government employment situations. But in the private sector, you do not have a property interest in your job. So you're not entitled, generally speaking, to things like due process. And so because you don't have that property interest in your job, an employer can put whatever restrictions they generally want, so long as they don't discriminate against you under one of the constitutionally protected categories, national origin, sex, race, et cetera, et cetera. This seems to me, it's interesting. I know we'll talk a bit more about abortion and the Mississippi case that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear because their brief was just filed. One of the arguments that they make in this brief is that abortion should be treated differently than all other fundamental rights in our country because no other fundamental right involves purposeful decision-making that could result in the ending of a life. That sounds really familiar. So if you take that argument exactly in parallel about the vaccine, it would run exactly in the inverse. It would be like, you have to have a vaccine because your decision purposefully not to get a vaccine could lead to the termination of a life. Wow. Isn't that something? You know, again, the arguments that I hear coming from Republicans about this, about individual liberties, seem to stop at vaccines and masks and go no further into decisions about sexuality, gender identification, abortion, partner choosing. And so where we decide that individual liberties predominate is quite bizarre in this country and really lacks a lot of consistency, particularly if you want to say, well, listen, if it can potentially end a life, then we should be able to, the government should have a place to restrict. That's what they're arguing, abortion. They don't argue that same logic when it comes to vaccines. And, oh, my goodness, they certainly don't argue that logic when it comes to the Second Amendment and guns. So the whole thing to me sort of smacks
right.
Stupid hypocrisy. You know, you hear that from me a lot. None of what they say makes any sense.
But they say it anyway. Maggie Dawn, our fine guest, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, we appreciate you coming around, and specifically on this abortion issue. And you're exactly the person I want to talk to about this. Apparently, this case, they decided, the Supreme Court decided to hear this more than a year ago, and the reporting that I've seen is that the, well, they're Mississippi, they're taking a more aggressive approach than the one they presented back then, specifically stating, quote, the conclusion that abortion is a constitutional right has no basis in text, structure, history, or tradition. Maggie, I mean, all sorts of reasons why you're here. Your legal perspective, certainly being a female, affects you a whole lot more than me, Maggie. Let's just start from the beginning here. Do you think that the Supreme Court took this case under the a wrong pretext?
I don't think it matters. Whatever the reason the court took the case, we are where we are, and Mississippi has put forward an argument to invalidate Roe v. Wade and the successive case, Casey, that came in 1997, which then upheld Roe v. Wade. Just so that folks are aware, really what Roe v. Wade created as a legal standard under the 14th Amendment was what is referred to the viability rule or the undue burden standard. That simply meant that, not simply meant, but it means that a state cannot place an undue burden on a woman's ability to access an abortion prior to viability of the fetus. Because viability marks the earliest point in time where there is a constitutionally justifiable state interest in fetal life. There have been arguments about when viability exists. The medical definition is roughly around 24 weeks, and they pick that time period because typically if a baby needs to be resuscitated after birth at 24 weeks, they generally can then continue to breathe on their own. But you could push viability back maybe two weeks. Again, I'm not a medical professional, but the law in Mississippi outlaws all abortions after 15 weeks. There are not medically sound professionals that would say a fetus is viable under the medical definition of viability at 15 weeks. So they're challenging directly the Roe v. Wade and the Casey jurisprudence, and they're asking that those legal standards be completely obliterated. And effectively what they're saying is because the word abortion appears nowhere in any constitutional amendment nor in the Constitution itself, we can't read it in. And so when we think about all of the other fundamental rights that we've come to understand as protected under our Constitution, very few of those words actually appear in the Constitution. For example, the right to contraceptive and to contraceptive privacy. The right to marry whom we choose, whom our sexual partners are, our family relationships, how to raise our children, even if whether our children attend private school or homeschool, educational decisions. I could go on and on and on. Those are all things that you don't find that language in the Constitution, nor in any amendment. And yet, under principles like privacy rights, equal protection, and liberty rights and due process rights, these are the rights that over time the court has interpreted and read into the Constitution. This is certainly no different. It's very, very scary to me that they've taken such an aggressive approach. It isn't until the end of their brief where they say, by the way, if you don't want to get rid of all of Roe v. Wade and just say states can legislate and restrict abortion in any way that they so choose, so long as there's any kind of fig leaf, what is called in constitutional law, rational basis offered for that restriction, which is basically just make something up afterwards, that if you won't get rid of Roe v. Wade entirely, then reject the viability rule that it announced. And instead say that this Mississippi law satisfies the more traditional constitutional standards of review, like strict scrutiny. Or, finally, just conclude that this is not an undue burden and get rid of the viability rule. So there are, excuse me, many, many different outlets for the court here, and that's what's really scary.
Yeah.
The last major abortion decision came down 5-4 to strike down the restrictive law. But that was when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was still on the court and Roberts was the swing vote. Since then, she's been replaced, Amy Coney Barrett, who basically said, yeah, I'll vote against any decision that would try to undo an abortion restriction. Now we've got a 6-3 court. It looks very scary because there's lots of different options here.
So, Maggie, I get the sense from you that you're concerned about what may happen here. If they were to go with 6-3 and strike down the appellate court and allow this Mississippi law to exist, what would that mean for the rest of the country?
You will see just an absolute avalanche. Depending on how narrow or broad the court's ruling is, you'll just see an avalanche of abortion restrictions in Republican-controlled states, making abortion inaccessible for childbearing women in this country for the first time in any of our lifetimes in many, many states. And, of course, what this does is it harms poor women and women of color far more than it harms white women and wealthy women because, of course, wealthy women won't continue to access abortion basically upon demand as they did even before Roe v.
Right.
Wade. It will end up killing women as they access illegal and unsafe abortions. And really what all of this is about, you see arguments in this brief from Mississippi where they effectively say, this is not an equal protection problem because, listen, of course, this law applies equally to everyone. Quote unquote, restrictions don't draw distinctions between persons, to which I have to say, what the hell are you talking about? Only women can have babies. So by virtue of the biological difference between men and women, this law does only apply or does only inhibit the rights of half of the population. As Ruth Ginsburg said in that Casey decision of 1997, this issue centers on a woman's autonomy to determine her life's course and thus enjoy equal citizenship stature. Fundamentally, that is what this debate is about. Whether or not your religion or your belief system tells you abortion is right or wrong, women deserve to have control over their reproductive systems so that we can enjoy the full panoply of rights as citizens. That is what this is about, plain and simple. There is a whole rubric in this brief where they go into incredible detail about virtually every state had outlawed abortion and the long history of abortion prohibitions in this country to conclude that this has nothing to do with liberty interests because liberty interests are only those which, quote, objectively and are deeply rooted in this nation's history and tradition and implicit in the concept of ordered liberty. Hogwash that this isn't about liberty. How am I equal to a man if I can't control my own body and when and how I get pregnant? It's simply a really shocking argument. And again, it skirts around that fundamental problem. And that is the fundamental problem. How much time do we have before break, guys?
Like a minute. Less than that. Like 40 seconds.
Okay, perfect.
Let's just say wrap it up, Maggie.
Yeah, if you guys don't mind when we come back, I'd love to talk to you about some of the sort of factual arguments that Mississippi makes because they're just almost laughable in their complete lack of any relationship to reality these days.
Well, so, I'm not going to contradict you, Maggie Dawn, but you got to hold on for a second. Let us pitch it to Bray. Come back. Our fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law, more Devil's Advocates.
Crime, corruption, immorality, abortion, sodomy, sexual perversion, sweep our land.
Freedom!
The big and tall of political talk. Dom and Crouch are the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If you have not yet downloaded the fancy new app, make sure you do so. Go to your Google or iTunes App Store and download Devil Radio.
Dominic, we got a fine guest. She's sticking around. Maggie Dawn, where are you calling in from today, Maggie? It sounds like you're at the bar.
I'm actually at the pool.
The good life, Maggie.
Well, Maggie, we wanted to give you an opportunity to finish your thought, but before you do, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I always envisioned that Roe v. Wade was sort of this this unicorn, and you didn't actually want to catch the unicorn. You just needed the unicorn to be out there. And Roe v. Wade's been a fundraising mechanism of the right for years and years and years, and you turn them out. But God forbid, Maggie, that the Supreme Court should rule in entirety to throw out Roe v. Wade or undermine it so significantly that it leaves it up to the individual states. Maggie, what do you think that reaction would be to the electorate?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. In other words, what would the evangelical excuse for voting for Donald Trump and his ilk be like after that? Because that's how they defended it, right? I mean, it raises this interesting, oh, wait, we got what we wished for. Now what? You know, how do we make the Democratic devil a devil again and fundraise against this, you know, these single issue social questions? Because you've seen, like, gay marriage, for example, has pretty much come off the political radar, right? It's very interesting. So, you know, I think it may flip in terms of fundraising to, listen, Democrats, you've been asleep at the wheel. You blew votes or didn't vote because you never conceived that something as fundamental as a woman's right to choose could ever really be under threat or question. And now it has been. And now we've got states in which women cannot access abortion safely and on demand. So I think it would be quite polarizing. I'm certain that the right would come up with the next evil doing by Democrats that they could take target at, but it certainly would require some rebranding and shifting. And if Trump wasn't enough of a call to arms to Democrats and centrists and moderates and people that believe in the principles of democracy to stand up and be heard, this would certainly be yet another wake up alarm, as if we all needed a second one. But it would certainly change the dynamics quite a bit.
Maggie, I pulled up some polling, some research, Gallup, on this very topic. 32% of Americans think that abortion should be legal under any circumstance. 48% of Americans believe that should be legal under certain circumstances. And just 19% of Americans believe that abortion should be illegal. I mean, Maggie, that's 80% of the people that are, you know, in favor of abortion in some way, shape, or form. And I don't think they mean under Mississippi law.
Yeah. Again, I think it relates back to your question about how does this change the political landscape? Because it's effectively the tails of the bell curve, or another way to put that, it's just, you know, the loudest voices, which tend to not be the voices of the majority, are the ones that are garnering the attention and basically directing policy, particularly in the Republican Party these days. So, you know, I don't know if Republicans end up losing votes. I'd be interested to see polling amongst married Republican women and young Republican women to see what their responses to something like this would be, and to kind of try to segment out evangelicals. But again, you know, does the electorate always vote their values? It depends. Which one is the dominant value? Is it the environment or is it abortion? Well, that varies, you know, greatly. So, again, very different political landscape if Roe gets gutted.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That is our fine guest, Maggie Dawn, attorney extraordinaire. We appreciate you sticking around. About another 5 minutes here, maybe 4 minutes left on in this segment. I want to get you the opportunity, though. This Mississippi filing to the Supreme Court, you say, is factually challenged. What do you mean, Maggie?
Yeah, so leaving aside what I'm going to call the fluff factual predicates that they baked into the Mississippi legislation, which is all of these almost laughable pronouncements of wanting to protect women. You know, it's the old, the justifications that have been used for the last decade, right? Like, oh, they have to have hospital admitting privileges because that's helped save women's lives. Like, no, it doesn't. You know, so there's a bunch of that crap in the Mississippi legislation. But what I found really disturbing was that in the brief, Mississippi effectively argues that Roe should be overturned because the facts on which Roe relied back then no longer hold true now. For example, Roe's one of the sort of quote most quoted phrases from Roe was that without abortion, unwanted children could force upon women a distressful life and future. And Mississippi argues, well, that's not, of course, that's not true now because there's paid maternity leave. We have better and more affordable childcare, right? I'm not kidding you. This is what they write. We have prohibited pregnancy discrimination. Every state has a safe haven law where a mother can take the fruit of her loins that she just gave birth to and turn it over to the state child protective services until that kid is adopted. And that's, of course, fine. And all mothers would feel completely comfortable doing that because effectively contraception is free. Oh, except under Obamacare, which all those same conservatives fought to get the right. contraception band-aid removed from Obamacare. Failure rates for contraception are virtually at zero these days. And now there's medical research that fetal viability can happen at 12 weeks and the fetuses feel pain. Well, that is not widely accepted, nor has it been scientifically tested, blah, blah, blah. And again, really? Paid leave? Yeah, except if you're an hourly fast food worker. Better child care that's less expensive? I'm sorry. I've had people that make millions of dollars to me complain that they're thinking about having one of the spouses stay home because the child care is costing upwards of 60 G's. So, like, these factual predicates that they say, oh, those social impediments for women before, they don't exist anymore. Again, simply neglects the reality that affects, again, mostly poor women and women of color. It is such a facially, sexually discriminatory and poor person discriminatory set of legislation. I hope the Supreme Court shuts Amy Comey Barrett and her ilk down, but I remain deeply concerned, my friends.
Maggie Dawn, appreciate you coming around so much. Maggie, I've got your polling. Polling says about a third of Republicans say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. And amongst Republican women, they support keeping Roe v. Wade by over 50% in 2018 polling. 90% of all voters say they would support a friend or family member if they had an abortion. That's a lot of people. Come back with us. Maggie Dawn, thank you so much. The 4 o'clock Happier Happy Hour, it commences right now.
My Satan sense is tingling.
I'm Satan reincarnated.
They warned me Satan would be attractive.